season game, it would be freezing in this season. Again. Okay, let's get moving. So we left off in Rosh Hashanah with a running machlekes. We called it the machlekes Rashi Ben Adam. But we all know this machlekes was way before the days of Rashi Ben Adam, and it continued for quite some time after the days of Rashi Ben Adam. So now we have to ask probably the most basic fundamental question. It's relevant for us. Let me ask you. It impacts on the mitzvah of this tefillin and our lives. How do we paskin halacha on that question? So the first question would be, well, what mechanism would you even use to paskin such a shayla? So we read the Gemaras, and the Gemaras would go either way. Nobody had an absolute ironclad, totally convincing, knockout raya for the Gemara. So there is no raya. So we have two valid shittas in the shayla, and a little bit of the time. How you get a paskin halacha? So if we live back in the good old days, back of the Beis HaMikdash, back in the days of Beis HaGadol, Sanhedrin, so this question would go to the Sanhedrin. They would analyze it, and they would come up with a psak. And then we would be comfortable if we had Teir Shia Rucha, Mishpah Shia Rucha, Tassi, or something. But you understand? That's how halacha works. But we haven't had a functioning Sanhedrin in over 1,500 years. So MK, what mechanism would we even use to paskin such a shayla? So the halacha tells us that when you have an issue that has not yet gone to the Beis HaGadol, even in the olden days when there was a Beis HaGadol, it's up to the Beis HaGadol, but made it for the Beis HaGadol, so that either Shita, as long as the Shita makes sense, and the Shita is being presented by someone who is more royal attached to Paskin, if somebody offers their view on halacha, then they don't know how to read out of this, so then probably they're not entitled to their opinion. But if a Rashi presents his view, and Rabbi Tam presents his dissenting view, and it hasn't been an Amdul Minyan, hasn't been a psach, a formal vote based on a Rabbah, so either Shita is valid, and Al Zen Nem or Eilu Divra Lekim Chayim, and if you perform the mitzvah, if you think you want to follow Rashi, you want to follow Rabbi Tam, either one would be acceptable. So the Chora, that's what should happen today. The Chora, that's what the din should be, just by Al Zen, that we don't have the ability to go to Beis HaGadol. So the Chora, at first glance, either Shita should remain valid halacha. That's the Pasha that's marked.
Why? We can't go by the rope or something?
The question is, okay, we're going to get to the rope in a second. Okay, we're going to try to figure out what the rope is in a second. So that's what I would have said the halacha is. So the Rambam, in his introduction to Parashat Mishnayos, and those who joining me for the night shiur in the second half of the summer, so we'll probably talk a lot more about this. We're going to be giving the shiur, hopefully this year, about the Torah Shabbat, the structure of Torah Shabbat. So the Rambam in his introduction to Parashat Mishnayos observes the following phenomenon in halacha. It goes way beyond the issue of Rabbi. It just says one question. Just during shiur, just no cross conversation. Unless you have such a zakasha, places you can't control your yitzhahara, there's a kasha, you can't operate in all the days. But otherwise, all cross conversation is just. Okay? So Rabbi said, the Rambam makes the following observation in terms of, quote unquote, development of Psach Halacha. We know that it's Yadua Mufursam, agreed upon by everybody, that once the Gemara comes to a conclusion to a Shaila, the game's over. If there's a Machlek Zabai and Rava, Chazal tell us that Hilchazak and Rava, except for the six exceptions, Yav and Yav, that's just the way it is. Nobody today can say, well, I think Abayah, I'm going to follow Abayah. Or we have a machlokes between, Rav and Shmuel. I think Rav says, look at Rav. But, I think Shmuel's got the better, he's got the better argument than this one. It's out of the question, can't do that. Post Rav's question, why not? Where was the Beis HaGadol? Who was the Beis HaGadol? What Beis HaGadol? Beis HaGadol ceased to exist. There are different opinions, actually, when it formally ceased to exist. According to some Rishonim, it ceased to exist even before the Churban. Once it left the Lishkas HaGozes, the famous Gemara in the Sefer Rosh Hashanah, that the Sanhedrin already left the Beis HaMikdash 40 years before the Churban. Some say at that point it ceased to exist halachically. Others say that, the Rambam says that even though it wasn't in the Beis HaMikdash, it still was a functioning body. It still had the koach of Beis HaGadol for a couple hundred years later. But Tazmas, by the time of Chasimus and Gemara, it did not have the Torah of Beit HaRavah. Not Kuli Abul or Kuli. There was no Beit. There was no 71 Ravonim sitting around in Pasuk Shiloh or the days of Avinu Rav Ashi. So what's their problem? Everybody said, no, what's the Kasha? If there's no Beit HaRavah, so what makes Pesach to the Gemara, in a sense, binding? Why can't the other view in the Gemara, the view that was part of who rejected? Who rejected? Who gave Avinu Rav Ashi and Koch to reject? So the Rambam begins to present what the answer to this question is. Rabbi Chaim Wasserman expands upon this a little bit. And basically, the Mahalach and the answer are as follows. That the notion of Beis and Hagadol is really a very strange concept. Because if I were to ask you, let's say there was no Parsha Beis and Hagadol. Let's say there wouldn't have been the Torah would have told the Kippur people to go to the Beis and Hagadol. How would you have a Chariya Shailah? Every Shailah Rabbi. Rabbi Cohen says play, Rabbi Levi says play, what would you do? I mean, the reality is, and Mishmah, but now there are going to be differences of opinion. So, what would the din have been prior to the Chiddush HaTorah? What mechanism would you have thought you would have used? And here she is. What's the Svar Rishonah?
I guess you'd go by Rove.
You probably would have got rid of Rove of who?
Rove people
who like a probably Rove, Tamidit, Rove, Boga. But probably not Rove about Batim, or Rove, right? People who don't know what their real own opinion. You would probably have to pull the Tamid Chachamim on the topic and come up with some kind of majority. Ram Mahapas. We know there's a Din Rachamim Mahapas. So I'm going to start with the Din would have been. You would have been taking a majority of Chachmi HaTorah in that given generation, and whatever they would say, that's what the Din should be. Almost going to look like a perfect democracy. I mean, not the kind of perfect, but a democracy of Tamil Chacham. That's the chora of what the din should have been. What's the Chiddush HaBeis and HaGadol? Chiddush HaBeis and HaGadol is that you don't take a rove of every single Tamil Chacham, but rather you take a rove of who? Of the representatives of Tamil Chacham in each and every generation. Can you imagine a system where every single Shah that comes up, you have to poll every Tamil Chacham? Can you imagine how ineffective a system that is? I give a motion on the bottom of the pile off of those. You guys, anyone here? No one here is 18 yet, right? Okay, see, you never voted yet. So when you vote in America, so after you vote for the, what are you voting for, president, governor, whatever it is, there's always one or two questions, right? One or two questions on the bottom about you're voting in some proposition or something, right? So it's very strange because you've never seen a ballot, so I don't know if you've probably seen a ballot at some point in their lives to get your parents to take you into the ballot box when you're 2 years old. So it says in the bottom two questions usually. So it gives you this very, very legal mumble jumbo when you're voting for something. And then it always explains it into more, down to earth terms, which are also completely incomprehensible. So I never understand why they bother doing this. I don't want to boast, but I think I'm probably, at least, medium intelligence, the average voter of in the United States. College, master's, graduate school, smicha, I've been involved in intellectual activities for most of my life. So I think I'm probably up there, somewhere in the middle. I have never understood one of the propositions. My general mahalach is I always vote no because usually when you vote yes, it's going to cost the taxpayers more money. So that's my general mahalach is that sheva ta'asa. I don't understand that. Okay. If you have a mistake, I may have voted in favor of legalizing marijuana. Okay. Anyway, it didn't make much of a difference. It's a one hand that anyway. Okay. Fine. Imagine. Headlines. Rabbi, sweet vote, So what's the shot in this? Why did they put us in there as such a concept? Because the Caron, if you think about American democracy, or democracy for that matter throughout the world, is not really democracy. It's not the real thing, because, as I think Abraham Lincoln said, a government body is full of people, other people. Real pure democracy means every single body is a shiva. Every law, every bill that's being discussed, we should send out a referendum. Everybody should vote on it. So if we're having a bill, should we raise the speed limit to 75 or something, every single person should be polled and ask them what they're sugar. As it is not just the way the government is set up now, nothing gets done. Every single person voted, everything, you never get anything done. So it's understood, the founding fathers, they understood that the only way to make the system of democracy work is You can't have the people vote on everything. You have to have the people have representatives. They vote on their representative. No taxation without representation. So you vote for your representative, and then the representative's job is to try to represent you. So in theory, your congressman is supposed to be doing what you want him to do. That's in theory what he's supposed to do. He's supposed to be trying to figure out what the relative of his base is, the people who voted him in is, the people who he's representing is. That's what he's supposed to be doing. That's the concept of democracy. So Muhammad also tells you have the same idea in Torah, says the Rambam, that in theory it should be a vote of kochach meter, that it's not shayach, we have such a thing. Every time we have shayach, we're not sure, should you repeat Yalav Yavon, should you repeat Yalav Yavon, or not? Oh, let's every time a Chacham Lord should send, we should email his opinion. But we should be, right? We have such a system. So the Torah sets up that they're committed to Chacham, they're not voted, not a pure democracy. It's not that we have, every 10 years we vote in, should we have the Sanhedrin, but the each Sanhedrin, so the Sanhedrin back from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, they appoint the next ones, and that's what. So you have the greatest of the Chacham, the Prophet Yisrael, who are representing all the Chacham and Torah, and that's our Shalaz HaPaskin. So it comes around and says, what if the system breaks down? What if you don't have an Israel anymore? So what system do you go back to, in effect? What's the real system? The real system is a rope chachmei Torah. That's the real system. The problem is that it's not effective. And you're not going to have answers right away because it takes a lot of time for such a concept to develop. Well, upset the rope chachmei Torah. It says the Rambam, that's what happened with Man Chassim Sekemar. When Ravina Ravashi sealed the Gemara, so the Gemara was not just, you know, two people sitting around like, gee, let's write it with Talmud Bavli one day. Ravina Ravashi sat down and wrote. The Gemara is a compilation of hundreds and hundreds of years of thousands and thousands and thousands of Tanei Chachamim, and finally, by the time the Gemara was put into place, was completed, and was spread throughout Klal Yisrael, there was an agreement that all the Chachamim had heard at the time, this is the final word. This is it. That's what the Rambam writes, that any Pesach that's found in the Gemara is binding all members of Klal Yisrael. When you have new Shilas hundreds of years later, a new Shila comes up, and one person says one thing, one person says the Rambam, each person can consult their own Rabbanu. Pesach that's given in North Africa is not necessarily binding on France. The Pesach in Germany is not necessarily binding in Spain. If you have different minhagim, that's what we have. Some Jews eat kidneys, some Jews don't eat kidneys, etc. And that's okay, says the Rambam. Anything that was developed after the Chachmei Gemara, it was never really agreed upon by everybody, is not binding at all. So according to the Rambam's understanding, whenever you have something that's Yimnu V'Gomru, that's literally voted upon by the Sanhedrin, or the absence of the Sanhedrin, it's agreed upon by the whole Chachmei Torah, that is binding halacha. That is the din of those Sosfer, Dam Shek, Yuchay, Mishmol. Post Chassim HaGemara, it's not so easy to have such a conclusion, such a universal conclusion. Not so easy, but not impossible. Every once in a while, you have an area of halacha, where we show them how a machlekes, and very often the machlekes remained a machlekes. It was never really agreed upon. But very often you do have a case where yes, there was a machlekes, yes, there was a dispute, but as the generations continued, as years went on, it became clear what the universal psak was. All the later opinions sided with Shita X rather than Shita Y. Once that pivot of time happens in history, and again, it's hard to pinpoint exactly, you know, in the year 1132, when Rosh Chodesh Nisan, all of a sudden, it doesn't happen like that. But over time will tell, when you have a certain phenomenon that develops, that it's clear that all of Klal Yisrael are doing in one way, that becomes the Pesach of the quote-unquote base of the level. That becomes the Nimnu V'Gomru of Klal Yisrael. That's exactly what happened when it comes to the Lechus Tefillin. When it came to the Lechus Tefillin, in the days of Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam was a raging machlokes. Rashi did not learn Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin, Rabbeinu Tam not learn Rashi Tefillin. And each one was acceptable, and each one was a fulfillment of the mitzvah, because of each sheet that was said, there was no right against one against the other, there was no base of God's Rechuriyah, there was no acceptance of Klal Yisrael. Chakol's round that the Shaila was not yet decided, both sheetahs were valid sheetahs. However, the Rishayim tell us, the Shukhrah Paskins, as time went on, the later Rishayim sided with Rashi, Rashi is the one sheetah, and it became reached a point that at the time of the Shulchan Aruch, there wasn't the Shaila anymore. There wasn't the Machloikis anymore. There was nobody in the days by the time the Shulchan Aruch came around who really truly held her that Tam was the correct Shita. Everybody agreed, Nimnu V'Gomru, the Havach of the Sukkah is like Rashi. Therefore, Bizman HaZeh, when we put on tefillin, we are not Cheshish Rabbeinu Tam. We pass in the Havach of the Lishim Sofek, Afi Adavar Sheerucha, That's the Pesach of Klal Yisrael, which is the halachic equivalent of the Pesach of Beis Hamikdash. Rashi and the Rambam are the correct way of putting on tefillin.
Why did that happen?
It would appear that as the Rishonim went on, the riots of Rashi seem to be more convinced than the riots of Rabbi Natan. There are those who have other reasons why perhaps it happened. And there's a whole question about these old tefillin that was dug up in Bavel that seems to support Shitas Rashi. There were different reasons as to what turned the tide. But the mice in the tide turned. There's no question that Rabbi Shulchan Aruch came, it was Nimrim about against Rabbi Natan.
Didn't the
Gaon Mishpah read it now? There was some didn't. Even within the Gaon, there was some who didn't sometime. So Rabbi Sai, not within the fact that that is the final halacha, nevertheless, we do find almost like an undercurrent a little bit for the following idea. That even though we basically follow Rashi, we basically the halacha is like Rashi, and nobody today would make a bracha and remain it down to it, Afa Pichein, yes, as an Eden, Midas Chasidus, it would be proper for many people to wear a Medit HaTzvot also, not at the expense of Rashi, not to make a bracha on a Medit HaTzvot, but in addition to wearing Rashi, Matoiv, as a Chum Rabbi Yalm, as a Nitzchah, not as Ikra did, to also at some point wear a Medit HaTzvot. There is such an idea that exists. This goes back away to the times of the Maharam of Wurttemberg. Maharam Wurttemberg was the Rebbe of the Rosh. Anyone know the famous story about Maharam Wurttemberg? The very tragic ending to his life.
Locked in a tower, and
yeah.
Then they wanted to pay back his ransom, but he quoted the Mishnah and
Kitten. Mishnah and Kitten, right?
Says you can't negotiate
terms. Very good. Excellent. Right. Excellent. Rutherford was the leader of the Jewish community in Germany at the time, and the government did not like him. The government didn't like most of the Jews at the time. They wanted to get the Jews to pay a lot of the money against the Kabbalah's bar. They arrested them on Rutherford, thinking they're going to get a lot of money, ransom money from the Jewish community. And he sent the message that no one should ransom him because he was concerned, like the Mishnah Kitten says, if they'll ransom him, then next week they'll steal somebody else. And they'll constantly just extort money from Jewish community. So he actually spent the last years of his life in jail. Even after he died, it took quite some time for his body to be released. So the Von Rothenberg's Talmud, one of his Talmidim of was the Rush. This is why when the Rush saw what happened to his Rebbe, the Rush realized he's the next on hit list. So he ran away. He ran away to Spain and the rest of his life in Spain. That's what we were talking about tzitzis. We were talking about the tzitzis shoes that we said about the question about wearing linen begadim. So the Rush writes that when he was in Germany, he never saw anybody wearing linen begadim. And he got to Spain, he saw a lot of people wearing linen begadim. What changed from Germany to Spain?
Well,
the weather. Germany's up north, it's pretty cold. Spain's down south, it's pretty hot. So linen's much cooler than a wolf. So the Rush says, hey, wait a second, I just walked into Spain. And all of a sudden, everyone's wearing different begadim. That explains to me what it was based. Anyway, back to this one. So the days of Mamrud, the Rambam when he wrote that as a Midas Chasidus, what you try to wear a Medit HaTzvot as well. So the Shulchan quotes this idea, and the Shulchan just puts a little bit of hesitation on it. He says, you know, since it's not required Mikra Din, nobody said this is required Mikra Din, you have to always be careful. Whenever you do a Midas Chasidus, you have to be careful that you shouldn't touch upon what?
Yuhara.
Yuhara is like guiding up. You're showing off a little bit. The folks can use the phrase Mechzech Yuhara. That what you're doing smacks a little bit of a little haughtiness, like, who do you think you are? In fact, from Miami. So, there's a story about the Rav. That once somebody was doing a certain activity, and they asked the Rav, does this fall into the category of Mechzik Yura? That appears to be like Guy did. So the Rav said, no, this is not Mechzik Yura. This is Yura Mamish. This is the real thing. It doesn't look like it. It's the real Yura. Fine. So therefore, the Shulchan Aruch strongly recommends that somebody should only wear a Medit HaTzvot if it's understood that they are kind of a person who does these kinds of, they're a very firm person, guy learns a lot, they're not good at Lashon Hara, he's not good at a lot of other chumras, he's a Yashin guy in the Chum, he's a guy, he's the guy that's machmer and everything, so then it fits into the picture that it's okay for him to be machmer and this, but a guy, he's not so firm anyway. The guy doesn't come to minyan on time. The guy spends most of what he said were eating a cake and iced coffee. And I'm not going to say anything bad about anybody. Just an observation. So he's not so firm anyway. But a bit of time to fill anywhere. So look right. It's a chuchu. It's a joke. It makes a farce out of it. So work on the regular halachas first before you get the mitzvah chassidus. That's what Rabbeinu Tam. That's what Shulchan Aruch writes. Elam ke muchsir bechassidus. You have to be a chassid. It means a chassid, a big sin. Not a chassidus. You have to be a chassid, a real, real love from a very, very special person.
So does this mean if you know that one person is not really holding up like halacha, like you should try to like correct him to the full extent because you know he doesn't do it?
No. We're talking about the industry above and beyond regular halacha. Just because the guy's not so machmir on one thing doesn't mean he shouldn't be machmir on other things. But there's a baseline of halacha, and there's almost like the finishers in there, the things above and beyond. It's like mashallah, the vadamba. If a person is, say, if a woman is dressed up, she's going to a wedding, so she's dressed up nicely, and then she puts on jewelry, so it looks nice. If she's, she's jogging, and she's wearing, and she puts on some very expensive looking jewelry, it looks silly, that doesn't fit. So the jewelry is something that's above and beyond the regular clothes. So too, the Midas Chassidus says that once you've reached the point of proper observing the Torah mitzvahs, and you're already starting to do other kinds of Midas Chassidus, then it looks right.
I don't know if side question still on the topic. Is there a reason why like Chabad and other religious people have the minhag to
vote? Oh yeah, okay, we'll get to it in a second. Okay, so again, I'm trying to walk you through history here. So we started out with the days of Rishon and Rasher and Adam. We moved to the days of Ram Rutherford, now in the days of Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch is telling us that only somebody is Muchsar b'Chassidus. So comes the Aruch HaShulchan, right? Hundreds of years later, HaShulchan was married in the 1800s. Comes the HaShulchan and writes that he's looking around Eastern Europe and he sees that a lot of people are putting on Rabbeinu Tam tefillin and they're not such ay-ay-ay muchzokim b'chassidus. They're chassidim, but they're not such as ay muchzokim b'chassidus. So says the Aruch HaShulchan, there was a minhag by the chassidim that they were very into Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. This was a minhag not just by Chabad, but by all the chassidim. Many of the chassidim, they were very into Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. Says Yerucha Shulchan, if you would have asked me 200 years ago, should everybody, every Tantik and Harry on the street be putting on Rabbeinu Tam tefillin? Not really, because it's not something that's appropriate unless you're Muslim Chassidus. However, once the mice, everyone's doing it, all the Chassidim are doing it, so then it's hard to say that it's a Yorah anymore. It's hard to say it's a Gaiva. And everybody does it. That's a big deal. It was a Gaiva, but only a few people were doing it, and this one guy who's not so machmir or anything else, all of a sudden he starts putting on Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, so that's not appropriate. But once, for whatever reason, for better or for worse, once it becomes nafutz, becomes almost like public policy in many communities, so then that concern in the Shulchan Aruch of you are a problem doesn't apply anymore. So that's what it's generally assumed today. Again, but the Hasidim, they're very into this, and the Sfarim are very into this, and by the hardcore Misnagdim, the Litvaks, and the Yekis, that other Chayyim of Klal Yisrael, so they follow what it says explicitly in Shulchan Aruch, that you don't go wrong, not everyone go wrong, except on our Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. So Yesh V'Yesh, those who have the practice, whose family practices, anybody have put on Rabbeinu Tam tefillin? Anybody? But I guess no Chassid, no Muksa B'Chassidus is here. Okay. Anyone's father or grandfather puts on Rabbeinu Tam tefillin? Okay, so
I think he puts it on like after.
Yeah, we'll talk about after that. But yeah, okay. So usually, generally speaking, people who come from a more Chassidic background, from a Sephardic background, do put on Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. Many others, many of us do not. So again, Yesh V'Yesh. But even those who are putting it on are not putting it on B'Torah's real, real mitzvah. Nobody today would say, okay, today I'm going to wear a Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, not wear Rashi tefillin. No, that's nobody would say that. It's really a nimud b'gomru against Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. Even within the practice of wearing Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, those who wear it, there were actually two different versions of how to go about doing it. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes the old practice that Rabbi Rishonim talked about wearing Rashi Rabbeinu Tam tefillin simultaneously. How do you do that? Where's it going to fit? What's the answer? Yeah, the answer is that tefillin in the old days is much smaller than our tefillin. The shear of a bias is significantly smaller than the size of our regular tefillin. It's about half the size of our regular bias really has to be. So why do we make such big fat bottom today?
It's
easier to write. It was harder on the sofa, but because the bias is so it's big, it gives you more room to write. When you have a small bias, there is no halacha. It shouldn't be too small, but it can be bigger. It's nothing wrong with being bigger. So as years went on, so did anyone ever see some of the older European tefillin? You almost don't see them anymore.
Yeah,
right? They're really, really big, right? They're really, really big European tefillin. Some of the Chabad tefillin are also very large. But the older European tefillin, when you guys already read the next generation, but when I was a kid, so some of the people who were in shul, read the Balbat, but people who had this old style European tefillin that was significantly larger than even an Aratron. So that's okay, that's fine. The only problem is that there's no way in the world we're going to be able to fit two tefillin, even our size tefillin, in the center. There's just not enough room on the arm and on the head. and we're going to hopefully talk about this later on in the summer as to where exactly what Baruch HaSilon is, but it's just not logistically possible. So therefore, those who want to wear a Benetton school today, unless you have the really, really small, anyone see, ever see some of the, sometimes you see by the coast, I see some of the, like the Temanim, some of the hardcore old Spanish, what? You can see we're in two at the same time.
No, you're more like
really small. Okay, so you can sometimes see, you can, every once in a while, you can see sometimes some of the older Temanim wearing manush, two pairs of tefillin at the same time. You see what I mean? But most people today who wear a Benetton tefillin don't do that. Most people today who wear a Benetton tefillin wear one after the other. And they usually put on the second pair towards the end of davening, or whatever the case may be. There is one other thing to be aware of, just, yeah, please. Yeah, that's what many people do. Most people today, we're a Benetton tefillin, they'll wear Rashi with the whole davening, and then right before the Ashrei, whatever it says, the end of davening, they'll take it off and put a Benetton without a bracha. You don't make a bracha Benetton.
Where do you read Tzivos go for a kid too?
If you have two, I don't know. You can't have a big arm. Big arm, small straps. I don't know.
I'm saying, don't they overlap?
Yeah, okay, we're going to talk later about why that's probably not a problem. Those are
Chatzitzes.
That's
it. It depends on
No. So. Oh, I mean, those with the old minhag, those who put on both, so would they make a bracha that put both on?
Or do you like
get
a rosh
on the same bracha? I don't know. I have to check 800 years ago. I don't remember. Check the old Temanim at the council. I don't know. Okay, everybody says, back to the story. There's one thing just to be aware of, if a person is following the Benetton and wearing two pairs of tefillin, one has to be careful how you store those tefillin. Because you shouldn't put them both in the same bag. Why is that? Because the Gemara says that you should for sure have marks on which is which. And that's Belishim Sofek. You'd have some kind of a way to remember which is which. But there's another reason why. Because you're not allowed to have one.
Isn't it because the one you touch, you put on it right?
But besides that, that's also true. You're not allowed to have a hole in the same. You're not allowed to store money inside your tefillin bag. You can put it in the plastic. The plastic is rough. You put it inside like the velvet bag itself. So you're not allowed to put a double hole. That's one of the seconds that ended. So the problem is that the Benetton tefillin are not really kosher tefillin. So therefore, they're almost as strange as that. It looks like a double hole. So to have the Rashi and the Benetton tefillin in the same bag would be a problem. So that's what the Rosh writes. You should be careful to have a separate one, a separate one for each one. By the way, it would appear from the fact that the Rosh was out of his way to tell you that you're not allowed to have them both in the same bag, this is almost like a contradiction to, who remembers the first day we spoke about a Benetton, so we mentioned Yerucha Shulchan's Chiddush, and we thought it was against the Pashas in the Sugya. Yerucha Shulchan writes that they're really, really both kosher, they're really activity, the one is good. So well, that's if that's true, so then why does the Rosh care about having two of them in the same bag? They have two pairs of children in the same bag, as long as they're both kosher. So the Pashas Pshat is, in the world of Halacha, is that Taka, one is kosher, one is not kosher. Holds bound that it wasn't Nimnu Begoma, which one is right, so that either way would be an acceptable way of performing the mitzvah. Because it's not as that, if a person only wore a Benetton tefillin, we have to say that that's no good. If a person made a bracha Benetton tefillin, we'd have to ask it, that's a bracha no tefillin. So therefore, the halacha is those who wear both have to make sure that they don't put them in the same bag. No, they're in the same way. There are different stuff in general in terms of this book, Sabbath Shows and Savari. There are slight nuances and differences within the two associates between different communities. There are basically three fundamental, sabs out there. Because we call Sabbath Shows, and strangely enough, it's Yashkinaz itself. That's strange that they say. So the Savari, Kodesh, is usually used by the Hasidim. Then there's the Savelish, which is usually used by the real, the regular Sabbath. Okay, and again, the differences are very, very minor. There are a couple of stuff that we okay. All right, any last questions about the suit before we move on to the next video?
Everyone agrees that really Rashi is like really the one that's the right parent tell them what was really accomplished.
Oh, right. What are you accomplishing? So in the world of Halacha, probably not all that much. Alpi Kabbalah, there are other reasons why. And that's, whenever you have anything Alpi Kabbalah, 9 out of 10 times, the Chassidim and the Sfarim will sign to it and the Stag will. So that's exactly what happened here with you. Okay, good of us, I can't go. Ready for next segment?